This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I miss this feeling, Stugatz, from the LeBron era Miami Heat of people enjoying Miami's misery, Miami being relevant enough for people to dance on their grave after one game.
We had LeBron back then, though, so it was easier.
Yeah, now he's on the other side. And one of the things to marvel at from last night, and I really do think, Stugatz, that 20 years from now, we're going to all sort of look back and be like, man, we were sort of idiots about how we viewed his career in real time. When you start telling your kids or your grandkids about what it is that you saw
right
across age, across, like, he looks slower. He's not the same player. He can't physically be the same player. And yet still, Stugatz, on a night that Goran Dragic goes out with an injury and Jimmy Butler goes out with an injury and Bam Adebayo goes out with an injury, how many playoff games do you remember LeBron James missing? Because he's played more of them than anybody out there by 100.
Yep.
And how many do you remember him missing? The indestructible nature of his body with that kind of mileage on it makes him a sports car unlike any in the history of the sport. It's just crazy. The worst you can remember is him getting cramps. The one time he gets a groin injury, the Lakers don't make the playoffs.
Right. Cramps first quarter against the Spurs. Was that game one of the fourth season with the Heat? I can't remember many, if any, Dan. That's part of what makes him so great. He's always there, and he's always great.
But it's crazy to think that three guys, the three leading guys for the Miami Heat in these playoffs, Goran Dragic led them in scoring the first round, Jimmy Butler led them in scoring against the Bucks, Bam Adebayo led them in scoring against the Celtics, that all three guys go out last night with an injury. And I'm asking you again to think of LeBron James and the mileage on that body and tell me, how it is that that is done. Because I saw that Stephen A. Smith, and this seems really silly to me, but Stephen A. Smith says that if LeBron loses this series, then he will question the legacy of LeBron. But if LeBron wins this series and then makes it back to the finals next year, then Stephen A. will question the legacy of LeBron. Like, it's a pretty silly thing that we do. Nobody should be questioning the man's legacy, whether he's 3-6 in the finals or not, given that you should appreciate and marvel at what he is able to do in real time, because you're going to be on the wrong side of history 20 years from now when it's hard to even explain how he was 3-6 in the finals. Like, you got to go back. It's going to feel like Wilt Chamberlain only winning a title. People are going to be like, how did that happen?
I don't think anyone's questioning his greatness. Unfortunately for him, he's always going to be stacked up with Stephen A. Smith, with other people, with myself, against Michael Jordan. And that's a place that he's just never going to arrive at. But I think people respect how great he is and how durable he's been and how consistent he's been.
I think it's a pretty uncool way of doing it. And it's just a general lack of appreciation for what it is you're watching as a sports fan. Like, normally when people appreciate something, whatever it is, art, music, they can be discerning about what it is that they're watching or listening to and why it moves them. We don't do this anywhere else. We might say an artist is overrated, but we don't do this. Oh, he's not as good as Elvis. Well, he's good, but he's not the Beatles. I like the Rolling Stones, but they're not the Beatles.
Right. I don't know. Do people do that with music, Mike? I feel like people rank guitarists, don't they?
I mean, Dan used the example that's famously always compared. Right. You're either a Stones person or a Beatles person. But no, sports is different that way.
It is. But I've heard people debate, like, best drummer of all time.
I debate best Batman.
Right.
No, you could do all that. I'm just saying it's stupid to not appreciate it. To appreciate one so much that you can't appreciate the other is stupid. Like, it's just a stupid way of living.
I'm a Christian Bale guy myself.
We could sit here and parse the semantics on whether somebody is a better actor than somebody else. But you're talking about, like, think about what you're doing. Think about what you're doing. Oh, this person's only the second best person I've ever seen hold a basketball. And therefore, he does not compare. He will forever need to be in the shadow of the other guy, I believe, to be better than any other holding a basketball.
But Dan, because he's so great, I think people expect more than better than 3-6 in the NBA Finals. I mean, I do.
I mean, okay.
Because he's so great.
Okay. And you can expect that if you want.
It looks like it might get better than 3-6 in the finals.
We'll expect better than 4-6.
One game into it.
I marvel at the fact that we are in a place where we cover the holy hell out of this person in a way that's totally unreasonable and defies any kind of precedent in terms of how this network has been doing it for 10 years, and yet he's still underappreciated. Like, that what you're watching is underappreciated, that he at 35 bleeping years old physically out there is taking out a team with these young players in game one, and everyone's leaving the court. Even Goran Dragic and Jimmy Butler, who are quote unquote old by the primes of that sport, are younger than LeBron James. Bam Adebayo is an extraterrestrial. He's a pterodactyl. Like, that guy is athletic by any measure. And there he goes out of the game because it's a really physical game and he's got to go because it's hard on the body. And yet LeBron never misses time.
And while physically he may have diminished slightly from this athlete that we've never seen before, he's now partnered up with a guy that's also one of these athletes that we've rarely ever seen before, and he's catching him right at his prime. And after this series, very likely going to be called like the best running mate he's ever had. He got it right with the moves, even though it cost him the playoffs last year.
When you watch that game one, and we can sit there and dismiss the fact that the Lakers haven't shot that well all season and a half, and if you want to, we can dismiss the injuries to the Miami Heat. They're three leading scorers out. I don't know how they fix their Anthony Davis problem. I don't know how they fix that size problem, because you can see it while you're watching. He's making Jay Crowder look like the Rockets. Even as Jay Crowder is doing a nice job on him, you're watching and you're like, oh, that's too much. That's too much size. When he goes outside, he's going to get his jumper whenever he wants it. He's going to be Bam Adebayo with a three-point shot. And also, he's going to terrorize you on the boards because, oh no, look at that in the post. It's Duncan Robinson all of a sudden guarding Anthony Davis, because he can be out there with your smalls. He can be out there with all of your quick people. And so it's going to be difficult for the Miami Heat to overcome this for a number of different reasons, the chief one being the way that they're injured. I don't know, and the Heat don't know right now, whether Goran Dragic is going to come back or how you play through that injury. But plantar fasciitis is a pain threshold nightmare, and shots in the foot are a pain nightmare. Like, shots in the foot, there's not a lot of places for a big needle to go in the foot.
Yeah, Sabonis had to leave the bubble because he just merely had plantar fasciitis, and we didn't know the exact severity of that. He tore his plantar fascia, and yeah, that's really good to test an older player's pain threshold. A guy that likes to dance around with veteran moves in the paint, pushing off that foot constantly. This isn't a spot-up shooter that maybe can get away with it. I don't know how he does it.
So what do you do? Like, what adjustments can you make if you're Spo? There doesn't seem to be many.
They need to be healthy.
Trade like, for Giannis, maybe. they have guys that can match up with LeBron James and Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, but everyone would tell you that those guys aren't as good as Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So, I don't know.
The idea that Goran Dragic is going to play in the finals, he has never played in the finals before, and he's going to try and play through pain with that injury, I don't know how it is he can be himself. But I ask you again, when you look at replays of how Goran Dragic got injured, just look at replays and how benign that looked. You tell me how that doesn't ever happen to LeBron James over 15, 17 bleeping years. Like, that injury just looked like, oh, look, Goran Dragic has a lot of mileage on him. And this time it snapped.
Who has more mileage on them than LeBron?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody in the history of the sport has made this run through minutes and everything else. And I'm telling you, that's why I'm saying that what his body is criminally underappreciated. Never mind what his mind is as it relates to playing basketball and being smarter than anyone he's playing against. But his mind is a marvel of the modern age. It's about as close as we come to superhero stuff with the human body. Let's go back in time to a different time in sports America. It's not that long ago, but some of the details are going to feel, because of how much has changed, like it's that long ago. Once upon a time, the New York Yankees had two stars on just the left side of their infield who were bigger stars than anyone in the sport is today. Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez played next to each other. The Yankees did a thing you do not see a whole lot based on the captain and his integrity and his place in the franchise's history. They took the better shortstop and moved him to third base because A-Rod was an interloper and a mercenary and would never be in New York or in baseball what Derek Jeter was, even though A-Rod was a better player than Derek Jeter.
Right. What the Yankees did was the right thing, Dan.
Okay, so the right thing, according to sports fans who can be romantic about this kind of stuff, regardless, baseball was a different sport back then in terms of being at the center of the national consciousness, and you can argue that Jeter and A-Rod, during their careers, are in the top 10 of athlete stardom at their time. Baseball does not make stars like that anymore. But here we are yesterday, and Derek Jeter, as they age and are still competitive, A-Rod's trying to get back into baseball with J-Lo, trying to buy the Mets. A-Rod and Jeter were pitted against each other in the buying of the Marlins, and the Marlins ended up selling for more than they should have, at least in part, because they are competitive, and still, both of them.
Right.
And there seems to be, in that competition, a distaste that Derek Jeter has for some of the things that have happened with A-Rod and just what a lot of people accuse A-Rod of for a long time now, which is an insincerity or a trying to find his voice and not knowing exactly who he is, so pretending to be the athlete that everyone wishes for him to be. And a lot of times sports fans can sniff out a lack of authenticity. They appreciate the lie, even if it's real, more it's funny to watch. It really is when you look at what it is that's happening with Jeter and A-Rod now as they continue to compete across the landscape. And yesterday, the Marlins win their first playoff game in 17 years.
Yeah, they did.
And also, Mariah Carey started doing the publicity tour on her book about how giving details on the sexual escapades with Derek Jeter and how he and sex with him for the first time was, quote, unquote, so sensual. This was happening as the baseball community was simply dragging A-Rod and his broadcasting because A-Rod kept calling for bunts in the modern age. And it's interesting because A-Rod has repaired his image with the people outside of baseball. But it doesn't seem to me like the people inside of baseball have a whole lot of use for A-Rod, and especially when it comes to the analytics of a baseball game where the announcers are smarter than they've ever been, Stugatz, about what it is they're talking about. The analytics, basically Tim Kirchen and Boog Shambi know their sports. Like, very few people are able to know football or able to know basketball even, because you can basically inform yourself now in a way that makes you almost as smart as the manager if you wish to. And A-Rod's still talking about bunting out there when baseball has moved away from bunting.
And extras, Dan. Bunting's back this year, even though the extra inning rules are different. And Mariah Carey, typical Mariah Carey, riding the Marlins' coattails like always. I'm going to make a proclamation right now and say Mariah Carey will never appear on this show again.
Help me there. I don't understand what the prediction is you're making.
He's saying Mariah will never be on this show again.
Yeah, that's a proclamation, not a prediction. She will never be on this show again.
Has she ever been on this show?
She'll never be on it again after what she did yesterday, trying to steal the shine from the captain and the fish, first playoff win in 17 years, and here she is all of a sudden. Mariah Carey, author, please get out of here.
You think that's stealing the shine? I think yesterday was a very good day to be Derek Jeter.
Yeah, well, she was trying to get some of that attention, and it's not going to work, Mariah, and you will never be on this show again.
All right. I think every day is a good day to be Derek Jeter. win or
that's,
lose.
That's an excellent yes. point. But a couple of weeks ago, it leaked out that the song My All, which is a very flattering song about whoever Mariah Carey was singing to, was actually about Derek Jeter. I mean, there's a Derek Jeter-sized hole in that lady's heart.
Plain as day, she's trying to ride the momentum that the Marlins have been riding this season, and she knows this is going to be a national story, and she wants to get in on it, so she wrote a book about Derek Jeter. And Mariah, it can work on some other shows. You can go on KJZ if you want to, but you're not coming on this show.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is there a Derek Jeter-sized hole in Mariah Carey's heart? I do want to talk to you, though, Stugatz, about the idea. A-Rod is, you know, ESPN's lead baseball announcer, and he is the face and voice of baseball for us after all of the scandal and everything else. We went with star power, and there are very few broadcasters who were as excellent in their career as A-Rod was at baseball during his career. There aren't a lot that you look at, no matter how much you like the Romos of the world, that are just clear Hall of Fame resumes doing the broadcasts on the games. But he's getting dragged by the baseball community. Like, the baseball community hears him announcing a game. He was trending yesterday, and it was just basically insults about, right, like, how bad his analysis was.
From who? Like, Bill James?
Bill James doesn't make things trend, Stugatz.
That baseball community, Dan, is annoying, and it's weird. It's a baseball game. It's a big game. And for big games, you want big names. And A-Rod is the biggest name out there. And if he's still talking about bunting when other people are talking about, you know, OPS plus and all that stuff, so be it. I'm good with it because it's A-Rod. Like, the analysis of a baseball game, to me, is annoying that people would get that upset because A-Rod's up there saying, hey, lay down a bunt.
It's because you don't care about baseball. If somebody was doing that to your Jets, if you'd get mad. You're going to tell me you're not the guy who gets mad at an announcer who seems to be doing stuff? Like, the easiest thing in sports to do is get mad at the announcer.
I understand that, but the inside baseball people who want every single announcer to apply their way of thinking to the broadcast just annoys me. A-Rod has his way, and they might have their way.
No, but Stugatz, one of the ways is informed by data, and the other one isn't. Why is A-Rod calling for bunts? He wasn't a bunter. Like, why are we talking about Hank Aaron, 21 bunts in his career, when he had 3 after the age of 22?
Because at the time A-Rod's calling that game, his gut is telling him, hey, this is a perfect time to lay down a bunt, and that's the kind of analysis I want. I mean, that's it.
Who are these baseball people? Was it Mariah? Is Mariah criticizing A-Rod also? Because I've had it about up to here with Mariah and her baseball stories for one day.
Splash!
Never again on this show, Dan Le Batard.
Why is the phrase "I've had it up to here"? Like, why? What is? And where is the here?
I think once you get up to here, that's enough. You know, I don't know where here is, but I think once you've arrived at here, that's enough. You don't want to hear any more from that.
Historically,
there's here and there's there, and there's okay. You can deal with there, but once you get to here, you pass there, and that's it. Enough.
Amin Al-Hassan texted me the other day wondering why it is that no one ever disputes Mike Greenberg when he says that's neither here nor there by saying it is there. I do think it's there. And just someone should call into that show when Greenberg does that. When he says something is neither here nor there, you should argue on behalf of either here or there because he shouldn't get away with that. Christine Lisi, you were saying...
And finally, a Japanese study has revealed a chemical in McDonald's French fries may be the cure for baldness. Oh, so that's where Chris Cody's been.
Wow. We're going after Chris Cody.
But he's not
unbelievable.
Here. Good job out of you.
Billy has grown weary of something. He is done with it. And it seems like Stugatz, you know, when Stugatz and Cody are around, they are allergic to more information. They don't want more information. Stugatz just got done telling you, I just want a famous guy talking on television. I don't care if he knows what he's talking about or not.
I just want A-Rod. I love A-Rod.
Billy is now done. Billy sides with you on this. he'd like to get rid of a graphic throughout the game. Which one is it, Billy? I wonder if people...
win probability graphic in the NFL that keeps popping up the entire... Enough of that. I mean, how wrong have they been 2 weeks in a row in the Falcons game alone? I don't need every 10 minutes for you to come out with your guy. Oh, there's an 82% chance of win probability. Oh, it's not a 17% chance. And then like 2 seconds pass by, well, it's dipped down to 64%. And then someone gets like a 3-yard rush and it's like, well, now it's 72%. Enough of this already, all right? I'll tell you who's going to win and who's going to lose based on what I'm watching. And you can't tell me when a team's down 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter that they have like a 30% chance win probability. I've seen wilder things. Did you guys see the Super Bowl this year? What was the win probability in the Super Bowl headed into the fourth quarter? Here's win probability. When Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, there's 95% chance you're going to win that game.
It's a fair point.
Very good. Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Are you done with the win probability graphic?
Do you like that graphic? Because I'm with Billy. Like, whatever just happened, just watch the game, let it play out, and see what the score is at the end. You know,
I don't have a general objection
We need a grit meter. That's what we need when we're watching sports.
A grit meter?
Yeah. That's right, a grit meter. Yeah. And then we'll have it sponsored by some grit company. You make some money back that way. And who has the most grits? I don't know. And then they tell us like little graphics. I mean, I'm doing someone else's job right now. I don't need to figure out how the grit meter works, but I'm telling you, you could sell that thing, have some things on the side going up and down. Have it be like, you know those things when you're raising money for something, right? That you just kind of color it in with like a red thing and it looks like a thermometer. You have that. Ooh, or maybe you do it like in a pan or a pot or something where you'd cook grits and then you have that thing just kind of slowly filling up with grits on the side and then you know how much grits a person has. And then again, sponsored by a grit company. It's not for me to figure out. I'm just saying, if we're going to do this win probability, why not a grit meter?
Well, what is grit?
Guts. I mean.
Thank you, Stigatz. I appreciate it. But actually, what is grit? Like, if I wanted to go get grit somewhere, where is it? Where do I find it? What do I call it? Do I go to the grocery store and ask for grit? I don't believe that grit and grits are synonyms.
It's like pornography, Dan. You know it when you see it.
Thank you, Billy. I appreciate all of your insight on this matter. Does anyone on this radio show know the specifics of what grit is? Roy, do you know what grit is?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for food, you would look for something like cream of wheat. If you're looking for something like gravel, you would look for sand, something like that.
Okay, so grit is something I pave my driveway with. That is what I use grit for.
It could be. It could be something you order at the Waffle House. It depends what you want, you know?
Yeah, you could put it on your roof. You could put it on your shingles and whatnot.
Okay, and it serves what purpose? Forgive me for not being a handyman or an outdoorsman. I just don't understand what it is to give a team asphalt. Or to give a team the ability to roof their home. Like, I don't know, to assign to them a grit meter is assigning to them the sticky, pebbly substances that help you give something congealing.
It's, Dan, you just know when you know. You can see that someone has grit when they have it. And another thing that comes along with grit, gusto. You should have a gusto meter, too.
Here's the thing, though, Billy. The reason I ask you so many follow-up questions is because you say you know it when you see it, but you evidently know it when you see it. I don't know it when I see it, and so I want you to teach me what it is I need to do in order to see grit.
You ever see Zach Thomas?
Boom.
You've seen example. Grit. Then you've seen grit.
All right. Good modern reference to Gots to help the young people in our audience. That's the only person you could go to when you go to grit.
Kyle Juszczyk.
Grit.
786-456-4837. Who has grit? 786-456-4837, because I think it's just going to be 90s baseball players and hockey players.
Yeah, fullbacks.
And middle linebackers.
Are you sure? Is it just the domain of white people?
It would appear so, Dan. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I just thought of it. Brad Marchand. Oh, no. Yeah, okay, this is a white
grit,
person thing.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is grit the exclusive domain of white athletes?
Just a coincidence, but Wes Welker.
Just a coincidence. All right, very good.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. News from the Dan Lebitard with Stugatz Nation. Someone has just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Eric Reber. At Eric New Life says, grit is a passion and drive over long periods of time.
Wow, you spent a lot of time looking up the tweet for that sponsor, huh?
Yep.
You just read the definition of grit. I'm not asking you what grit means. I'm asking you what grit actually is.
All right. Well, that guy who was part of the Dan Le Batard Show Nation presented by Dr. Pepper is giving you his definition of grit.
Okay. I could have gone to a dictionary for that. I know how it's used in sports. I want to tell the audience this because I don't think they know it entirely. Many of you are not watching us on ESPN News, so you cannot see the icy stare that Mike Ryan gives me anytime that I decide to go to calls. Over the many years that we've been doing sports radio around here, we have an aversion, and this happened very early on, to the taking of calls unless they're trained callers that are trained to do whatever funny thing we need them to do. But most sports radio callers are truly awful.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like truly awful.
Yes.
It's hard to listen to, and I've made fun for a long time. One of the reasons that I chose this as a soft landing spot that's not as hard as writing is because I looked at the people who were outsourcing their work on the radio, and they were just saying, hey, let's go out to Bill on a mobile phone and let's get what he thinks about that Bengals-Eagles tie so I don't have to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
Our job
so
is...
So you were looking at me, yeah, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, our show outsources to an ensemble that's larger than any other production team in radio.
Mm-hmm. So we outsource the production on grit, and Mike Ryan is staring at me, icy stare. Why are you staring at me?
I hate taking calls. I just hate them, fundamentally hate them, but I especially hate them when I'm the only person running the board because it's extra bull bleep I have to do. So you can go to Ryan on line 5, Dan.
All right, but hold on a second. But you also hate them because now they're just blurting people who are gritty, right? So it's the worst way to do this. It's the very worst way because I'm not even giving them the room to be funny or clever or give us some entertainment. They're just going to shout a gritty name for us, and we're going to decide whether that person is indeed gritty.
Precisely. Silver lining is that it's quick.
Yep.
But that's bad for me because that just means another call replaces it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so why don't you handle this then? Why don't you just go through the callers and we will get the avalanche of grit and we will get back to doing our radio show. Stan Van Gundy is going to join us here in about 10 minutes. Hold on a second, Stugatz. Billy, what do you got here?
Well, I'd like to help since this is going to be complicated for Mike. I have a list of the top 12 grittiest NBA players from 2012. If you'd like, I could sprinkle those in.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you've got a list. Where is this list from? Who is the source?
This is Bleacher Report, obviously. It's the top 12 grittiest players of 2012 in the NBA.
I thought it was grit.com.
Why is it 12? Why is it? Okay, it doesn't matter.
It's 2012. Maybe.
Right, 12 for 12.
Or maybe there wasn't a 13th player.
Yeah. There were only 12. Maybe
only
I think
12.
That's what
they
it was. I think that there were only 12 gritty players in the NBA.
This was also Bleacher Report in 2012, so countdown lists were essentially 98% of their content.
Okay, in order to give you yet more to do you want to get the fanfare sound for Billy's top 12 grittiest NBA players? From 2012.
That while I'm on the air also pulling up callers?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, sure. No problem, man.
Are we doing
anything?
Approach
a hard network,
this is great.
This is all good, man. Let's do it.
Dream come true.
Billy, are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. Now, it's unclear as to whether this is counting down or counting up because it just says 1 of 12, 2 of 12.
Well, I imagine it's going to jump off as to whether or not we're ascending or descending, given the names you're about to say.
Let me give you this from experience, Bill. 1 of 12 is 12, okay? 2
okay.
of 12
wow.
is 11. I know that's confusing, but that's what it is, okay?
Okay,
I feel like all of these guys are just tied for first. All 12 guys, the grittiest players from the 2012 NBA season, according to Bleacher Report, are number 12, Billy.
Kobe Bryant.
Number 11, Billy.
Chauncey Billups.
Number 10. Number 9.
Dirk Nowitzki.
There's the white
there
guy.
There he is.
There's the white
I'm
guy.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch number 10. I'm doing a lot here.
Who's 10, Bill?
Say 10 again.
I don't know, because the numbers, again, now I'm doing
five. Oh, it's a slideshow?
Right, yeah.
Sorry, I hate
rookie,
those.
Rookie mistake.
2012 yeah, okay. BR slideshows.
The next one's Anderson Varejao.
Rip personified.
What is this? Number eight.
Dwayne Wade.
Number seven.
J.J. Barea.
There are a lot of black and brown people on this list. I'm confused. Number six.
Manu Ginobili.
Wait a second.
Number five.
Hedo Turkoglu.
Okay. Wait one second.
Are there any gritty American white people? Four.
Brian Cardinal.
There he is.
The custodian.
There he is. Number three.
Kurt Thomas.
Kurt Thomas.
Really?
Jesus. Number two.
Steve Nash.
And the number one grittiest basketball player from 2012, according to Bleacher Report and Billy?
Well, those were all the names. I think we lost the number at some point.
Ryan, where are you,
There's
Ryan?
There's always an ad in there somewhere.
It's weird. Ryan, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have Ed Orgeron's voice.
Okay, very good.
Not bad.
That's not bad, actually. That's better than I thought you were going to do.
Let's call this game Grit or No Grit. They throw out the name. We decide if it's gritty.
Okay, yes. You are a entertainment mastermind, Stugatz, on the fly, the way that you create a parachute of entertainment.
Thank you.
Colin, you're on the air.
Mark Schlereth.
Yes. Gritty.
A lot of surgeries, yes. Gritty, yes. Go ahead.
Jason, you're on the air.
Jamal Adams.
No, we reject it.
No grit.
Yeah.
Miko, you're on the air.
Go ahead, Miko.
Butkus.
Butkus, yes, a white metal linebacker.
He invented grit.
Yes, he did invent it. He poops grit. Who else is
Jordan, you're on the air.
Matt Stairs.
Oh, gritty baseball player.
Justin, you're on the air.
No.
Jeff Bridges.
What?